Wouldn't you love to get paid for doing what you love to do? If you're ready to move on to what's next, join us for Circles of Change with Dr. Zara Larson. Our uplifting live talk show on Saturday mornings from 10 to noon will have you circling back, not running in circles, to pull your experience forward in new ways. Advance your career, plus help others with theirs. Join us Saturdays, 10 to noon, right here on 104.1 The Truth, for pragmatic advice and unconventional wisdom. Circles of Change with Dr. Zara Larson, where your path is created by walking on it.
Well, welcome to our second hour here in Circles of Change. We're staying right in that groove of being global, with a real pleasure for me to connect with a colleague from the automotive world who shifted in a variety of directions, Darlene Knight from Tecumseh Products. Good morning, Darlene.
Good morning, Zara.
Well, welcome back stateside. You're over in Europe, I understand.
Yes, I was. Yep, had a good visit over there this week. A lot of good things happening.
And hopefully more than just another round of the great conference rooms of the world.
Well, my visits are mostly the great plants of the world more than the conference rooms, and I like it that way.
You bet, exactly. Let me introduce Darlene. She's indeed a global vice president of manufacturing and quality at Tecumseh Products, which is a manufacturer of compressors for residential and specialty air conditioning, household refrigerators and freezers, and commercial refrigeration applications. Darlene started her career in the automotive industry at General Motors, where she held a variety of operations and engineering positions, starting as a cooperative education student all the way to director of operations, including an international assignment in Mexico. From General Motors, Darlene moved to Eschede, a German automotive supplier of door hinge and brake accelerator pad systems, as the vice president of operations for North America, and lo and behold, then became president of North America there. She holds a Bachelor of Science in Industrial Administration from General Motors Institute, now called the Kettering Institute, also a Master of Science in Engineering Science from Rensselaer Polytech Institute. So who would have ever thought the amount of global expansion, let alone, Darlene, the fact of stepping out of the car world into now refrigeration. How's it feel?
Oh, it feels great. It's amazing how similar life is inside automotive and outside automotive. Manufacturing people are really the same all throughout the world, and the concepts that make an excellent automotive assembly plant are the same concepts that make an excellent compressor assembly plant or motor assembly plant or condensing unit plant. So much of what I have learned and done at General Motors applies directly to what we're doing at Tecumseh.
Well, you've been in the manufacturing side of the world and looking through that set of sunglasses, I'll call it, for almost 30 years. What are some of the big changes you've witnessed, been part of, had to swing around in, and so on?
The biggest changes that I've seen, because I started in the then 1980s, and you know, the manufacturing in the U.S. and the automotive industry was a very traditional environment. We didn't even know what lean manufacturing was. We originally called it synchronous manufacturing. So it was, you know, way before any of that implementation had started at General Motors in North America. And to see the transformation of that company through the lean principles, which have been around for many, many years, it was truly amazing. And that coupled with globalization, I would say, are the two biggest changes. And I don't just mean globalization in the sales arena. You know, Tecumseh is a very global company. More than 80% of our sales are outside of the U.S., even though the company is headquartered in the U.S. and started in Tecumseh, Michigan, it's really a global company. But also the globalization of manufacturing around the world. It's amazing to sit on a conference call with people from Brazil, France, India, and the U.S., Canada, Mexico, all in one call. And we can all speak the same language and share not only if we have an issue, how to resolve it, but if we have a good idea, to be able to spread that sharing across the company very quickly. And then, of course, with the internet and all the tools that we have available now, and we can send videos and pictures, and we're really working as one team, even though we're thousands of miles apart. Really been amazing.
In fact, I was kind of laughing, the tools that are in our hands. My son just headed off for college a few weeks ago, and lo and behold, I got a text message this morning with this picture of this, you know, totally obliterated pizza, and he just said, life is good. And, you know, you just say that warms a mother's heart that he's eating something, right? But to your point, the idea that you can walk through a factory and snap a photo or attach a drawing or get into some literature and now offer that kind of connection. I do want to touch base on one point. You said that we share the same language. And I think what you are implying, of course, is not just the literal sense of, for the most part, working in English, but the language of manufacturing, the language of lean, right? And so the commitment that has kind of rippled throughout your company and your suppliers and your customers to create a mechanism that is baselined in the same set of focused results, right?
Yes, that's exactly right. And it's, you know, really the fundamental five principles of safety, people, quality, delivery, and cost. And you can go into any Tecumseh site and look at the boards where we're sharing information with the people on the shop floor and in those categories. And that's how I manage, you know, even to the board level, we look at those metrics, and it's the same in all the plants across Tecumseh. And you're right, we can go into our customer plants and they're the same way, and we expect the same things when we go into supplier plants. So it's really a very universal language. I've been there since January, and I realized there were really pockets of excellence throughout the manufacturing world. Everyone was working in lean principles. There was a high level of training already, really smart people doing good things. We put together something like the Toyota production system, but we call it TOPS, the Tecumseh Optimized Production System. We felt like TPS was already taken, so
right.
We put the O in there. And so we put structure around what everybody was already doing. And so it's become much firmer, and it's on the top of everyone's mind, top. So it's been a great evolution here in the past few months.
But, you know, it all presupposes starting with one big mantra shift, doesn't it? And that is that breaking the traditional thinking that the smartest ideas have to come from the top down, and that instead you really are empowering everybody on an equal playing field and leaving your titles at the door.
That is exactly right. That is the hardest thing for some traditional managers to overcome. It feels like they're relinquishing control.
Right.
You know, you have people at the top who feel that way. You often have, you know, industrial engineers who feel like they know better than the people on the floor who do the job every day, day in and day out. And maybe on a piece of paper, they do know a better way, but it's not going to work as well because it's not the idea from the person on the shop floor. And it's really hard to break those trends and get people thinking the opposite way. But once you do, once you turn that pyramid upside down, it's just amazing the power of that and the power that it changes the organization so dramatically. And people are excited about their jobs, and the ideas flow in. And instead of the engineers and the managers being overworked and not knowing how they're going to get everything done, you engage the workforce, and they want to do it. They want to make their workplace better, and they're so happy that somebody's finally listening to them and their ideas, and they are have to be a part of implementing them as well. And so much gets done with, you know, the same number of people. And it's a much friendlier work environment for everyone.
Well, exactly right. Well, you know, but it's not an easy journey. It takes an awful lot of trust. And like you said, letting go of control of things, because you think that's what you're being sanctioned to do from the onset. But share with us, what do you think one of your biggest challenges to date has been in this whole implementation of lean? Because I know you've been involved in this thought process across several companies now.
Yeah, I think it's for sure changing that mindset. And I think my biggest challenge to date in general was when I was working at Edge to North America in 2009. We had the economic downturn that was devastating for the automotive industry. Edge is a German-based company, and the rules in Germany for filing bankruptcy and when bankruptcy has to be filed are far more stringent than they are in the U.S. In fact, directors are personally liable if they don't, at the right point in time, file a bankruptcy. Well, Edge was a good company. I mean, it was definitely making money and had a lot of good things going, and but it also had a very high debt structure. So when the volumes went down, we simply weren't producing enough product to pay the interest, and so we had to file bankruptcy in Germany. And at first, it was not going. It was supposed to not be an impact in North America. So they filed for the EU. So all of those plants and all of those regions were inside the fence and
protected.
They were all okay. They were protected exactly.
Sure.
Well, in North America, we were outside the fence, and Treasury was managed globally from Germany. So I came to the realization a few days after the filing in Germany, after the German administrator came in and I started having some phone conversations with him, that they couldn't send any cash to us. And we didn't have very much cash in our bank accounts because it was all, you know, all the money was funneled back to Germany. That's just the way Treasury was run. So I came to the realization, like, we're in big trouble here. So and you know, the Germans, they were trying to call me and stay in contact with me, but they had all their issues they were dealing with there, so they couldn't, you know, spend a lot of time on North America. So I called my attorney and I said, the North America attorney, I said, hey, Bob, I told him the whole situation. I said, I think we're going to have to file a Chapter 11 bankruptcy and restructure. And he said, Darlene, if you don't have any money, you're filing a Chapter 7, not an 11. I could just feel all the blood drain from my head. I was, you know, responsible for hundreds of people,
right.
And I was hearing for the first time that, you know, we might be in a liquidating
state.
So
yeah,
So that was a time where I kind of went back to my lean principles and realized that I don't care what my title says, that I'm president. I don't know how to navigate through this. I don't have the background. I'm not an attorney. I'm not a financial expert. So I assembled a team of outside people to come in and help us navigate through it. And, you know, I relinquished control. But in relinquishing control, it did give me more power, because then I really was in control of, mm-hmm. of how things went, because I had surrounded myself with the right people. And I think that's a good lesson in general in business, is to surround yourself with good people and not to be threatened by people working for you that are really good. That's the best thing for you, is to have the best team assembled around you.
And in fact, people even smarter than you, right? If you really want to move out faster.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And empower them to do it. So that was certainly my biggest challenge to date. We did end up going through a liquidation, but it was very structured, and, you know, people had time to look for other jobs, and I'm not saying everybody found a job right away, and it was a crisis, but I think it was handled better than what the outcome could have been. We held on for a few months at least and gave everybody time, and were able to continue to supply our customers and wind down in an orderly fashion.
And, you know, many times we don't know how to see it at the time, but those kind of experiences as leaders are building your capability in untold ways that you know you're going to tap on later on in your career. So yeah, here you now find yourself having shifted then out of automotive per se, but still in the again, larger scale manufacturing environment. The idea of planned career change, I have a hunch that's not in your vocabulary at this phase of your life, although that's indeed how you navigated those early years coming up through a traditional U.S. manufacturing company like General Motors.
Yes, for sure. I felt like, you know, it's better to take opportunities that are presented instead of having a very rigid 5-year business plan or something. You know, I've seen people who, right out of college, they think they know exactly the steps they want to follow to reach a certain goal. And I think there are probably many paths to success, and there are probably many opportunities that could lead to something even more fulfilling if you just follow that. When a company is tapping your shoulder to do something that maybe wasn't on your radar screen, it's because they need the help, and they're trusting in you to do a good job at it. And if you take those opportunities and you just focus on doing that instead of worrying about when your next promotion is coming, I find you get more opportunities, and you get, you know, because it's good people, they get pulled in a lot of directions. As soon as you do a good job, when there's a need in the company, everyone's going to think of the good person to put in that role. And you end up with such a diverse experience, things that you never could have imagined on your own if you tried to orchestrate your own career from the beginning. And I think that just focusing on doing a good job in each and every one of those roles is the best way to, in my opinion, to navigate your career.
You also said something in an exchange you and I had a while ago that you said, volunteer for the inevitable instead of waiting to be asked. What example were you thinking of when you made that comment?
I had a couple examples. When I was straight out of school, I was working at the Wilmington, Delaware assembly plant for General Motors, and I was in industrial engineering. And there was an opening for an industrial engineer in a body shop on the plant floor. And imagine, you know, in 1989, what a body shop might look like, a lot different than it does today.
Right.
And everybody was kind of looking at their feet, hoping not to be the person that got tapped to, you know, leave the office area and have to go down and have your office on the shop floor. And instead of, you know, trying to avoid it, I just decided to, I applied for the job. I filled out the application and applied for it. I didn't even, you know, try to go to the manager and say, hey, I'm interested. I followed the process and applied, and everyone was shocked. And, of course, I got the job. I was the only person who applied. And things went well from there. I mean, I think it really, had I not done that at the very start of my career, I think things would have been much different for me. I went there and everyone was surprised that I did it. And then I just, you know, did my best job and I ended up getting promoted from that position. And
of course,
it ended up being when I started.
Yeah, really foundational move. You know, my story is not too different than that. Of course, you and I both grew up in the same company, but I came up through the classic engineering ranks. And when I could see it was inevitably, absolutely necessary that the top leaders have really bona fide, strong experience in both engineering and manufacturing, I asked for a move to manufacturing. And I got nothing but pushback. Well, oh, you don't want to do that. That'll derail you from this path or that path. Or my peers saying, are you crazy? You're going to have to start over on here or there. Or even my top senior mentor saying, we really don't think that's such a good idea. And I remember staring them in the face and saying, let me tell you, if I'm going to be positioned to take senior responsibility, if my generation is going to be successful, we got to be smarter than you guys are. And I think one of the things that we're not smart enough on is knowing the interfaces between engineering and manufacturing. And and I kind of shamed them into letting me make that move. And within 3 years, it was one of these, well, now we're going to merge engineering and manufacturing engineering. And, oh, yeah, let's pick Zara because she's done both. In which case, I'm thinking, wait a minute, I've only been over here for 3 years. But to your point, not only volunteering for the inevitable, but sometimes having to push the door open, as, you know, in some regard you did as well, and surprise people and probably surprise yourself as well.
Yes, for sure. For sure. And the other thing I've always tried to do in that same vein is try to figure out how to make something work. So, you know, I was doing launches and my husband was doing launches. We happened to work for the same company. And the first launch we did together, it seemed like we passed on the highway because I would be at the plant. And then when it was time for me to leave, it was time for him to come. So the next time there was a launch, we both just said, look, let's just volunteer to have an apartment. We went to Oklahoma City and we lived there for almost a year in an apartment, coming home every other weekend. And we figured out a way to do the right thing for us and the right thing for the company. And I try to do that all the time, and try to figure out how I can, if the situation looks challenging, how I can make it work. An international assignment in Mexico is another example of that, where, you know, it's not easy to live in another country, but it's necessary, and it was actually a wonderful experience in my life to have done that. So a lot of times the rewards are really great.
That's great. Well, I don't want to run out of time. I do want to have you just quickly share with us a little bit of the story of Tecumseh Products in Tecumseh, Michigan, and the refrigeration business. Give us a thumbnail sketch.
Okay. Well, the company is, I'm very happy to be on board with the company. I've been there since January, and it just has such a rich tradition. It was founded in 1934, and they developed the first hermetic compressor in 1937. So this is an industry that's been around for a long time, but there's been a lot of change, of course, with refrigerants and things over the years. So it's a very technical product, and, you know, it takes a lot of really good engineering to be good at it. We have, as I mentioned, a global footprint with operations in North America, Brazil, Europe, and India, and also China and Malaysia. And we have Jim Conner, the CEO, has recently put together, I think, a really great management team. I'm humbled to be a part of that team, and we have a great plan for the future, and I can see great things happening for us. We have a full line of suppressors, and we're moving into condensing units and refrigeration units, complete refrigeration systems. So it's an exciting company, and a lot of, I think, good things in store for us. We just recently, earlier this year, opened a brand new state-of-the-art technical center in Ann Arbor, Michigan. Mm-hmm. And most people know Ann Arbor, Michigan, because the University of Michigan is located there. So we have great collaboration with universities also throughout the world. And our locations globally are often located in university towns.
Exactly. That you can pull on the, the power of the cluster then to really leverage.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely.
Well, Darlene, one question I can't not ask you this, because you've been in the epicenter of personal career change, industry change, and company change. And I would say then, how do you think you've changed the most by helping others go through change?
You know, in the end, that becomes the thing that you remember through your career, is what you've done to help people. I mean, one of the best examples, I think, of that is when I was working in Mexico and I had responsibility for industrial engineering for the whole country. The people were so smart and educated and just so willing to learn. And, you know, we put a lot of structure in place that wasn't there from DM corporate. And just to see the organization grow and the people develop. And one of my responsibilities when I was there was to find a replacement for myself when I left the Mexican National. And I'm so proud of the fact that the person that took that spot has, you know, grown to be an excellent executive for General Motors and is now doing an international assignment in Korea and has really moved up the corporate ladder and done well. And I feel good to have been a part of that.
Exactly. And in some ways, that's how you've paid it forward for those who did the same for you.
Absolutely. Yes, you can't make it on your own. It's about building relationships and you know, helping people behind you and working and learning from the people in front of you.
Well, you said at the onset to forget the 5-year career plan. In fact, that's kind of how we're titling this segment. But I still got a feeling that you're a woman with a plan. So does that involve, you know, learning another language? I'm going to continue to exploit the possibility to learn, boy, what those lawyers and the finance guys do. I mean, what's in that future for you, Darlene?
It's definitely expanding in the across functional areas definitely something that interests me. I think that there's opportunity to apply lean concepts in engineering and finance and all of the the areas that are in the different functional silos. So I think that will be the next challenge.
Very good.
I'm looking forward to it.
Well, excellent. Well, and we're going to keep track of you in doing that. Again, it's been a real pleasure to host Darlene Knight. She's Global Vice President of Manufacturing and Quality with Tecumseh Products, based out of the Midwest, but certainly keeping that passport active and ready for those trips to connect with her colleagues and her customers. Thanks so much for contributing here on Circles of Change, Darlene.
Thank you. Goodbye.
You bet. My pleasure.
Change is chaotic. That is, unless you embrace it, going places you hadn't dreamed were possible. The Larson Group, Architects of Change, is a leadership consulting, executive coaching, and career transition firm. We help individuals make the most of their current employment situation or to step forward confidently into a career transition. Contact us at thelarsongroup.com or toll-free 1-877-544-2580. The Larson Group, Architects of Change, helping others unleash potential through transformational change. 1-877-544-2580.